Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. I have long admired Astoria High School teacher and community leader Jane Roberts, and I'm delighted to have her as a guest on this program today. Jane spearheaded and facilitated the Astoria School District's poverty simulation last week. Participants included a Clatsop County Commissioner, Astoria School District administrators and counselors, business representatives, social service agency representatives, and hospital representatives who discovered firsthand the chaos and crisis low-income people experience on a daily basis. Today, we'll explore how this simulation worked to sensitize and educate people in our region about the realities of living in poverty and what may come out of this in the future. Thanks so much for being here today, Jane.
Thank you.
And Jane, before we talk about the poverty simulation and how that came to be, let's talk a little bit about Jane Roberts. Please tell us about yourself for listeners who may not know you.
Well, I've lived in Astoria for about 30 years now, and I've been a public education teacher for the last decade. Spent 5 years at Astoria High School teaching language arts. Now I'm the literacy coach at Astoria Middle School, and it's a job I found that I love.
And Astoria in particular has meaning for you.
I married someone from Astoria and ended up finding out it's a really wonderful community.
What made you decide to facilitate, organize, and bring this poverty simulation event here?
Well, number one, as an educator, I constantly see the results of low-income poverty crisis with students being able to learn, being able to attend school. And about 3 years ago, my oldest daughter, Tracy, who owns a business in Fairfax County, Virginia, called me because she had participated in a poverty simulation, and she said it was life-changing, and told me if I could get a hold of the simulation kit, it needs to happen here in Clatsop County, because she grew up here and she understands the culture here and the issues here. So I did. I saw her recount of it and what she was inspired to do afterwards because of the role-playing she did really made me remember it, and I kept researching it. And finally, I went to Craig Hoppus, our superintendent, and said, we are having more and more families fall below that poverty line, and we need to be aware, we need to be ready to help, and I have an idea. And he was able to find grant money and was really, really supportive of this whole process.
Maybe we should describe exactly what a poverty simulation is, and I know that this was actually developed by Missouri Community Action Team.
Yes.
What exactly happens during a poverty simulation?
You know, I have to say, people came in with a preconceived notion of what it would be like, because those of us in the service sector have been given a lot of training and knowledge about poverty. But this was different. People came in and they were randomly given a name of a person they would play, and they were either single or homeless or a part of a family. Some people played the part of 16-year-old pregnant girl. Some played the part of an 85-year-old woman who was afraid to be on her own, and families that were suddenly newly unemployed. There were members of the family. People played parts ranging in ages from 85 down to 7 or 8 years old. And they were asked to really take it seriously. Each family was given a packet, and it described their situation, showed them what assets they had, where their job was, if they had a job, if the kids were in school, if the children had a special learning problem, so they could act the part. Then, throughout the simulation, we divided it into 4 13-minute weeks with 3-minute weekends in between. Throughout the week, life happens. So you might get a luck of the draw card with your family. The window broke. You have to fix it. The car broke down. Daycare might deliver a a notice to a parent, we've had an outbreak of head lice in daycare, we're closing it. So now where are you going to take your child for daycare? The social service agency would send a note in the mail to a family saying, you need to come in, otherwise you don't get any more, your benefits are about to run out. So how do you take time off work, manage all the needs of your family, find food for the family, deal with the type of crisis that people who have security with their income don't have to face because they haven't lost their savings. They aren't dealing with major illness without health care. Their children are fine. So our participants were able to really, really experience it.
Has the definition of poverty changed over time?
There, I think people maybe think two different words. There's poverty and there's low income. Low income people fall below the federal poverty line, and they are more vulnerable to the crises that happen in life, so that they can become then true poverty, where maybe they're in danger of losing their home. I know we have more and more families doubling up their households right now, not just in the nation, but here in Clatsop County. So they're not considered homeless, but they don't have their home anymore. And so you consider all this stress that puts on families. It's huge.
And I think we do have a fairly high rate of low-income families here in this community.
Yes.
In Clatsop County.
Yeah, I think we do. And I'm not up on the statistics for the rate of that. I do know Astoria School District, I think, has, that we have acknowledged, you know, have proof of 41 or 45% poverty in our students. We suspect it's much higher, but once especially a teenager gets to high school, they do not want that free reduced meal. It's embarrassing. They don't want to be singled out as needing more than the average kid, and so they hide it, and we aren't given access to that knowledge. All we see are the repercussions of a lot of absenteeism. Maybe you have to stay and take care of a sibling so a parent can work, and that happens 3 or 4 times a month. Maybe there's not enough food in the house, but you don't say anything, so you come to school so hungry you can't stay awake, or you come to school just cranky because you're hungry. Who knows? But there, it's really more hidden at the high school level.
We talked about this a little bit before coming on into the studio, about the fact that in the United States, poverty is, we do marginalize people who are either low income or are in poverty, whereas in other countries where the family structure is still more intact, whether you look at Mexico, you have, or other countries where the family is still together in one place and you don't have people falling through the cracks as much. What can we do about that? Is it a function of the United States that we have? I mean, every country has poverty in some way. But right now we're looking at what's happening in our backyard right here in our community.
Right. One of the realizations that participants came to during this simulation was they felt invisible. They weren't being acknowledged. They felt like they were on their own. And I hope that it spurred people who experienced it just in this small role play to say, in my community, what can I do? Because that's where action happens. Maybe people say the government should be doing this, this, and this. Well, bureaucracies are slow. Our families can't wait for things to be fixed. So what can we do as individuals in the community once we realize this is an issue to make a difference?
What can we do, Jane? And let's talk about the results of this, because you have some conclusions that you reached as a result of this. And why don't you share some of those with us, please?
You know, some of the small group discussions generated after the simulation, our participants realized that to put all resources in one centralized location would make a world of difference.
Geographic location.
Geographic, yes. Okay. Instead of, it can take you an entire day or two just to get the resources together and fill out the paperwork. And our social service agencies are really, like most places, understaffed. The people really, really do care. But they have to follow the processes to get help for people. One of the realizations was, what if you show up and you don't know that you're supposed to have every social security number of every person in your family? You're new to accessing help for your family. What if you don't know that you're supposed to bring documents for, do you have a vehicle and do you own it? And do you have bank accounts and what are those numbers? Those are issues of people seeking resources. The other idea that I think it's way overdue is having the computer systems communicate among each other. So when someone applies for food stamps, then they don't have to keep filling out the paperwork for maybe they need housing vouchers, maybe they need some kind of help with daycare. How can we make the system wrap around and more accessible? We realized that lack of daycare which has been covered extensively, and people are aware in the government service sector that there isn't daycare. But when I lived in Eugene, they had drop-in daycare for emergency services.
For anyone.
Have to be low income, and it was often called respite care. Let's say you are a parent and you're just about to snap. Life has just been dumping on you and you just need someone to take your kids, someone who's safe, and get a break yourself. That's what we could really use in this area, something like that for emergencies. Or let's say you have to go to work and the person who's supposed to take care of your kids isn't available. You can't miss work. You'll lose your job. So that's one thing. We don't have soup kitchens here. So people that participate could maybe say, wow, I could spearhead maybe in my church a soup kitchen. Maybe once a week my church would be willing to open up to feed people. What if someone said, wow, I could do an activity at the public library to maybe a book club for teens or something, a chess club, something to involve teens in an activity that would improve their lives. So those were some of the conclusions that came from it, were that we need to make service more accessible, easy to reach. Transportation, the cost of transportation. In this role play, no one could access any kind of help without a transportation pass. So maybe they started out with 5 transportation passes, and every person in the family who came to that agency had to have a transportation pass. When you ran out, you had to go purchase more at the quick cash store. And what if it was closed? For instance, it was robbed during the simulation, and suddenly it was closed because there was no money and the police were investigating. These are real events that happen to low-income families all the time. So you're short on resources. You can't get to where you need to be.
And most of us who live our lives, who are blessed and fortunate enough to have food to eat, a place to live, something that we're doing which provides resources and income, we really are not, I mean, I guess we really do see people on a daily basis who are struggling with these things, but they don't share those things with us. We don't have those interactions. And really, where do they go? They go to these agencies, and if the agencies aren't coordinating, then it is more challenging.
And the other thing we realized in the role play, that the people who were new to low income, someone had lost a job, there was only a single parent, whatever, and had never had to access public help before, didn't even know where to begin. They literally, the deer caught in the headlight look on their face, totally stunned. wow, how did this happen to me and where do I go? And I think many people don't even go for help. They try to seek help from friends, from family, to keep from doing it, or because they just don't know where to go.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and my guest today is Jane Roberts. Jane is with the Astoria School District. She spearheaded and she facilitated a poverty simulation last week, and we're talking about the things that the participants experienced and what is coming out of this, which is, as you say, more awareness of the fact that people who are suddenly new to poverty or to low-income situations, what do they do? What should they do?
Well, yeah, what do you do? I now know that Women's Resource Center takes a lot of the drop-ins that they realize, well, here's a place that might be able to help me. Clatsop Community Action. But you have to know that these places exist. I know that the state has, I think Clatsop County does too, if you can get access to a computer, go online and find the different resources that can help you. But you know, so many of our low-income people are semi-literate. They've, for whatever reason, they're not able to understand or read well enough to even know where to go. So what do desperate people do? You know, some resort to crime. And one thing that our simulation didn't even address was mental health issues. How do you help people that really can't help themselves because of their mental health? We didn't address domestic violence, which is an offshoot of this type of stress on families. We didn't address sexual assault. All the issues that if you are in a low-income neighborhood can be a reality of your life, not feeling safe for a second. One participant said, I've always felt so safe in this town, and I came to realize some people in this town don't ever feel safe.
So the suggestions that have come out of this would then be to put all of the social services resources in a centralized location so that if they need to find out about unemployment, child welfare, food stamps, that everything is in one place, centrally
right,
located.
Right.
And that is a brilliant suggestion.
I think it's a great idea. And we are fortunate. Clatsop County is a small county. And one of the counselors at the high school made the point in our debriefing that in this area, the social service agencies, Clatsop Behavioral Health Care, school counselors, they know one another by name. They've been working together for years and they call each other. I have this client who needs these resources. Are you available right now? Can we make an appointment? Let's set up the appointment. They do a lot of the phoning for people. If you're in Portland, Seattle, you're not going to get that quality of service because they're too big.
However, it sounds like we could still use more collaboration.
Oh, a lot more collaboration
and a lot more sharing of information. I think these ideas of the computer systems communicating between agencies so that you don't have to fill out all the repeat forms, that is so logical and so wise.
And I think there's a huge willingness for that to happen.
And the idea of a soup kitchen, which, as you say, yes, a faith-based community, a church could do that. Someone could spearhead that. If you're listening to this program and you have an idea about starting a soup kitchen, then you can reach out and you can make a difference and do that in your own community. And I think the idea of this, the safe, reliable drop-in daycare centers, that is really important. Because if you're ill? What if you can't get to your work? And that's going to provide the income you need to buy the food for.
Exactly. And that is the circle of frustration that happens. Every once in a while you read in the paper, someone just on their own makes sandwiches and lunches and takes them down to people that they understand are homeless or something's going wrong. And they just do that and they make it a part of their life. Those are the type of actions that some people are spurred to do from this role play. My daughter ended up for 2 years mentoring a young woman who was going to be out of homelessness for the first time in probably her adult life. She was about 30 years old. She had an infant and a boyfriend. She got her first apartment. And Tracy decided to mentor her, and what an eye-opener for her. She realized this young woman had been born into generational poverty, had never been taught how to maintain a home, did not know how to buy cleaning supplies, needed to be taught personal hygiene, how to even buy the products that you would need. She didn't know how to cook from scratch. So for 2 years, Tracy mentored her on this is how you care for your family. This is how you prepare meals. And then she made sure to tell the boyfriend, you get to do this too. You're going to learn to cook. You are going to also help keep your house clean. And the baby needs to be changed this often. And this went on for 2 years, and things were okay for a while. And then the young woman disappeared, and it turned out she had fallen again. She was back into her drug use and had her child permanently taken away, and the young woman was sent to jail time. And Tracy made the comment to me that she kind of felt like she'd wasted her time. Well, I'm older, so, you know, I've had a little more experience with people, and I made the point to her. So she fell off the wagon this time. It didn't work as well as for life, like you would have wanted. But you know what? She's now in jail. She's probably getting the support services to sober up again, get clean again. She has learned how strong she is. She knows now some more ways to survive and take care of herself in positive ways. Next time, maybe she'll last longer. Maybe the time, you know, it'll just keep building. That's what mentoring does. So even to take one person and mentor, one teen that could stay out of trouble because you care enough to give them time. Laura Parker has the mentoring, teen mentoring program through Clatsop County. There is a place someone might be inspired right there to jump in and say, wait, I can't do a lot, but I could sure mentor a young person. So we have a lot of opportunity here.
And as a result of this poverty simulation, now there are going to be others. Why don't you tell us about that?
There will be, well, for the main event for the start of next school year, all of the teachers in Astoria School District will go through this. All the classified staff, the bus drivers, secretaries, teachers aides, they will go through it because we really want in this district them to feel what it must be like to come to school when your life's in chaos. Because our kids hide it. They hide it. They don't come out and say it. It comes out in behavior, inability to learn. So we want to be very sensitive to it. There's a possibility that Job Corps will use it to train staff. One of the counselors there asked to borrow the kit, which I am really happy to lend out. The Columbia Memorial Hospital, one of the nurses in administration there would like to conduct one for doctors and nurses. So if you're interested, you could contact the district office and get a message to Craig Hoppus or myself. How do I go about doing this?
The Astoria School District office, because
yes.
You have the kit and you're willing to share.
I have a kit, and it's a big job to take on, but it's worth it. Time well spent.
You almost wish in a way that this could be done, this poverty simulation, in our schools, in our classrooms with our students, so that they would have more compassion for their peers. Maybe they don't know what their situation is, but wouldn't that
funny you should say that. I think we will be doing one for the seniors at Astoria High School. I would like it to even happen junior, senior level, because you learn the way this does happen. And I had better take my education really seriously and try not to have this happen to me.
Because, and I think the people who are suffering from poverty and from low-income situations where they don't have resources, there's a lot of shame associated with that. And then on the part of those people who aren't in that situation, who don't experience that, perhaps they're judgmental and they don't understand. And so have compassion, empathy, understanding, I mean, quite literally, you are walking in the man's or woman's moccasins when you do this program.
That's right. You are learning
what it really feels like.
And to teach, you know, one of the things we really try to do in school is to teach empathy and model it. as educators. So this would be a good way to make not be in, notice people who like to disappear and be invisible because they feel the shame. Instead, make them feel worthy. Because how can you feel like you're worth changing your life if someone doesn't reach out and say, you're a human? And I think this helps people realize the importance of treating people like they're humans.
And so. Anyone, there's no blame. Anyone can be in a situation at any time which happens unexpectedly.
Absolutely. Yes. Major illness. You lose your health care. You can't, you're taking care of someone who's too ill, and so you can't work anymore. It happens all the time to people who have planned their lives very well.
So, Jane, we only have about another minute or so here. What would you like the listening audience to know? What is it that you would like to say to them as a result of your experience of this poverty simulation, and just a message that you would like them to know?
I think the bottom line is to be aware of the needs in your community, find out what you as an individual can do, and take some action, even if it's one person you mentor. And just be kind to people. Just, you know, treat people like they matter. It's pretty simple.
A loving smile,
yeah,
is can go a long way when people, because people are hurting.
Absolutely.
and we've been taught in this culture not to show that. And perhaps the only way that we would see is that maybe someone is disheveled, they're not able to dress well, or they don't have the the resources to really. So you have to think, you know, what can I do to be extra loving,
right,
to that person?
Or even seeing a young mom on the street that just looks like she's a little tired, give her some acknowledgement that, oh, you're doing a good job, or, you know, what can I do? Just something to acknowledge that person as a human and doing something worthwhile.
Well, I really honor you and thank you for the work that you're doing in this community with our children, our young people, and with all these people who work in social service agencies. But it really is up to us. Personally, it is up to us to create a network of safety, of health, of love with all of us. I mean, we have that responsibility, I think.
Absolutely. The community. Be a part of your community.
Be a part of the community. And if you want to know about the poverty simulation kit, if you have an idea, if you want to use it in your school, in some facility, if you, whatever you can do, you can call the Astoria School District and talk with Craig or with Jane, and they will be happy to help you move forward in this. Thank you so much for doing this, Jane.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you who listen and who care about Coast Community Radio, our community radio programs which are here, and thank you for being part of this and for bringing your positive energy to everything that you do in your life every day. And that includes Terry Wilson, our engineer extraordinaire, who's just marvelous. Thank you, Terry. And also, I want to thank local talented banjo instructor Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program. Tomorrow is Earth Day. I hope you all have a wonderful Earth Day. And I have a great book I want to recommend. Wade Davis wrote a book called Wayfinders, Why Ancient Wisdom Matters in the Modern World. And it actually addresses some of the very things that Jane was just talking about. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath with gratitude for all the good things in your life and focus on those good things. Expand them. And then give yourself a loving or compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.